Robin Ayu from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another episode. Today, we are recording with this particular recording episode 212, and I want to welcome you to the conversation. My guest today built one of the most talked about companies in the B2B tech market. He raised over $150 million, scaled to 20,000 customers, and walked away from start over from scratch. I don't know why would anybody leave all this and start over from scratch, but well, we can't wait to hear about it. Not because he had to, just because he wanted to. And Braden Young is the co-founder of Sendoso, a sending platform that redefines how companies gift. And we've done a few podcasts on gifting on this podcast and how to connect with and win over buyers. He's also a co-founded in 2016, spent nearly a decade building it into a category-defining business backed by SoftBank, and then stepped away in 2025 to launch Slash Experts, which the topic of the conversation today, we can't wait to dig into it, a peer conversation platform that lets prospective buyers talk directly to a company, to company's real customers, so they can find out a little bit more about the company before they engage with a sales call. And the insights is pretty much devastating. And I have a deep sales background. When I saw the numbers, it sort of piqued my ears. 81% of the buyer have already chosen their preferred vendor before their first sales call. Braden is building around that reality. So the technology that we're going to be talking about, the company that we're going to be talking about, builds around that concept. He's based in San Francisco, which I was last week, attending Global Sake at the Adobe headquarters. And I wish we could have done this face-to-face. I didn't know. He's a husband, a father, and one of the most clear-eyed thinker when it comes to how trust is actually built in a B2B environment. Braden, welcome to the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to the conversation.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Number 212. It's a good intro. Yeah, I question that sometimes too, as to why you build a company and then you're like, I'm going to go do it again or see if I can do it again. Especially when I do like financial spreadsheets. I'm like, oh man, I miss having a team of people in finance to help me.
You know, it's funny. Some people have like, you know, a knack for something, right? Some people say, well, I get excited about starting from zero and building. And I've interviewed a few of these entrepreneurs on the channel. They get bored when the ship is sailing smoothly for some reason in their business. And they need that adrenaline injection, you know, when you get it at the start of business. And you're probably one of those individuals. I don't know, but we'll get to know you.
No, I am. That's true. I think that like Sendoso, we got it up to like 800. I think we were 1,000 employees at one point. And like your day-to-day changes a lot, where it's not so much building and creating and trying to figure out the new market you're growing into. It's more one-on-one conversations and strategy conversations, which are fun, and it's an amazing skill, just not a skill I possess. I like the early, messy, like got to put the systems in place, every dollar you got to be able to pull in, and like that's kind of where I have the most fun. And I knew I had at least one more in me, so when I was at Sendoso after 10 years, I was like, I'm gonna go see if I can build one more and see if I can pull it off, or at least attempt. And yeah, it was one of those where I'm not fully out. I talked to the Sendoso crew a lot, but it was one of those where I think you're right, I do enjoy the choppy waters versus the smooth sailing.
So for the audience, I mean, that's very interesting. Your new voice on the channel. Welcome again to the conversation, Braden. And they're probably interested to hear, like, what is your story from the beginning? How did you get here, basically? What can you tell us about?
Yeah, I mean, like, So I'm originally from California. I'm one of those who was born and raised here and just have never left. Both my parents were entrepreneurs in different things. Dad, landscaper, mom, florist. So as far away from software as you could possibly get. But I moved to San Francisco in 2009 when tech was not doing great. It was like right after the recession, and you're sort of like, all right, like where are we going in tech? What's it going to be? So I got to see a lot of brand new companies just come up from nothing, like the Ubers and the Lyfts and the Airbnbs, and they were all started, you know, like.
And I did try Waymo. I really love that.
Waymo, it's great, right? Like, it's like that. Yes, like that is that's changed the way I get around. But like, so like, you have this innovation in 2009, and I was like, I love it. So like, I jumped right into sales because that's what you do when you have no clue what to do, and jumped around tech companies, some great, some not so great. Had a couple exits. And then when I was in sales, I I, with a friend of mine, we were like, we got to figure out a way to get requests for demos. And we started sending coffee, Starbucks gift cards and emails being like, hey, like take this meeting and I'll give you $5 to Starbucks. And this was like around like 2015-ish. And people started responding. They were like, yeah, like I'll take a phone call. Like give me $5 to Starbucks. Thanks. And we were like, this is actually something. We should build a way to do this and automate it. So we learned how to code, found some people on Odesk who, I think it's Upwork now, who could help us design it. And we had this thing called Coffee Sender. We rolled it out, a way to basically have people send out coffee gift cards. And overnight, it was being used by like 60,000 salespeople. Like people just like grasp onto it. And we immediately got sued by Starbucks. They were like,
yeah, I was going to ask you about that. They sent you a desist thing. Well, what happened?
Letter saying, hey, you can't do this. Cause like when you would search like send coffee, we'd pop up before them on like search rank. And they're like, you can't buy gift cards. We don't know who you are. And like, why are you spending 60 grand a month or a day buying gift cards from us? So we're like, okay, that's fair. So we're like, can we come and pitch you on the concept? Yeah. And because we're in sales, we went to LinkedIn, we emailed every single person on Starbucks, like basically all our salespeople, like, hey, can I come pitch you? So we flew up there, pitched them on the concept, and they're like, yeah, you can go for it. You can use Starbucks and the way that you're selling and plug us into Salesforce of a way to send Starbucks cards from like a contact page. And that was kind of the start of Sendoso. Like we learned from there, we're like, we'll add more stuff to it rather than just gift cards. We'll figure out if we can add Dunkin' Donuts, add Tim Hortons, add DoorDash. Then we got this really dumb idea where like, we should also do physical things, not just e-gifts. And we're in a bar having beers and this guy behind us was like, I run a warehouse. We're like, awesome, can we send stuff to you? Like, which was one of those where like, I was in Vegas and we were in San Francisco and we were like, perfect, a warehouse. We'll do physical things, not just e-gifts for people. And we started sending all types of stuff to this warehouse out in Vegas. And then I, in a really bad, probably bad and good, I sold Capital One, which was like, they had a problem with sending gifts around. And they sent so much stuff to Vegas that we outgrew the warehouse. And so we were like, we got to get another one. So like we figured out how to like scale a warehouse, figured out how to scale a software company. And then we were like, we need more money to grow. I mean, there's of course lots of tangent stories in there, but like salesperson gone, like, hey, how can I build a gifting company was probably the short end of it. We've always approached what I've built with more of a go-to-market mindset than a product mindset. It's like, hey, can I kind of build this product as I'm selling it? And so that's what we did a lot of us do. So was we wouldn't build the integration until we had somebody who was interested in buying it. And that was very different than the mindset of 2015, 2016 of a lot of San Francisco software companies.
I am very surprised, to be honest with you, in a B2B environment, people will take a meeting for a coffee.
Back then, in 2015, like it was like one of those. Also, you know, it's still today. I mean, like, think about, like, you and I were just talking about LinkedIn. Like, the amount of messages you get in LinkedIn from, like, just being pitched. Imagine if one was like, hey, like, I'd love to pitch you what I do. It's 5 minutes. You're going to have coffee today. Here's $10 to Starbucks.
Yeah.
Or wherever.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, the amount could change. Your point is people still accept the gift, but the amount could change.
Yeah. And it's just different. I mean, it's one of those things where like one of my favorite gifts of all time is the handwritten like note. And that's so old school where it's like, you know, like, let's say like you decide not to move forward with somebody. If you get a note saying it was just good, thanks for taking the time. It was good to meet you. Like, that's classy.
I got to introduce you to this guy. I did a podcast with him. He is based in the U.S. I think he's based in Midwest somewhere. I just can't remember the state where he is. He used to be an NFL player. He got out of it, and he opened a similar idea to what you were saying. He figured that when people receive a handwritten note, they respond better.
Oh, for sure.
And then on his first sales job, I'm telling his story now. On his first sales job, he sent, in the first month, 500 written messages. He wrote them by himself by hand. And he closed close to $350,000 in 1 month. So he got really excited about it. And now he opened a company that does that using AI and auto pen of some sort that you can train the AI on somebody's handwriting and it does what it needs to do. They stuff them in an envelope and they ship them out.
I mean, it's one of those things where it's just different. I think that yesterday I got a book in the mail from a company trying to sell me. And like, it wasn't a hard sell. It was like, hey, I thought this was relevant to the space you're trying to grow in. Here's a book. And you're just like, man, all right, I got to respond to that person. Like, everyone always tells you when like they're having a kid, and like, I send like the same kid book to people that I'm trying to sell to. And like, it works really well because people are like, oh, like this, like it just, it makes something a little more reciprocity forward. Like people think that they owe you something, which is nice with gifting. And that's what we built with Sendoso. And then COVID hit. With building, and COVID was massive for us at Sendoso because every employee went home and every company was like, I got to send stuff to not just my customers and my prospects and my employees. So we went from 50 of us to 1,000 in a couple of years. And like, that was luck. We were having the right place at the right time. And the company grew really, really fast over those periods of years. And we went from that one warehouse to five. And we learned how to just like, we got pretty good at building warehouses because we were like, okay. And that was the skill I never thought I would have. It's like how to build like a warehouse management system. And so yeah, that was a fun ride. And then over the last year, I've started building something new, which we noticed a lot of people don't like to talk to sales as much as they used to. So we will connect prospects with current users of a system. So our AI will match you with somebody, or we'll use case studies or reviews to try to find someone who's already using the tool, who is having success there, the company put up, and like we can connect that person, that customer, with a prospect. And that's been kind of a cool way to not go around sales, but just offer another way to get information that you're looking for as you're trying to figure out what you want to buy.
Well, educate the buyer probably, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a lot of static reviews you see today are great, but they're not as trustworthy as they used to be. And so having an actual face-to-face conversation, everyone back channels. And so our goal is to make back channel easy.
For those who are listening, if you don't mind, on Sendoso, for instance, just to say a few minutes.
Yeah.
A, what does it do? What's the concept there? And how did you manage to get $152 million in funding?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we're like $220 million in funding now. But so what does it do? So it's a gifting company. So any sort of gift you would send to a customer, to a prospect, or to an employee, we're a little button that lives in your Salesforce or Dynamics or HubSpot, and you can press it, says Sendoso, and a menu pops up, a bunch of gifts you can send to somebody. And it could be e-gifts, think like Starbucks gift cards, could be physical things, think something with a logo on it, or a bottle of wine, or whatever have you that you might want to send to somebody to just say thanks, or hey, take a meeting with me. And you can also automate all of it. So you can automate in terms of like, let's say you have a customer who's approaching renewal, or a new customer just signed up, maybe you send a care package to them, like, hey, welcome to the software you just bought. For new employees, like you send welcome kits out and that sends to their house. So we do basically any sort of thing that's physical or digital, that would be a gift to somebody. And we track it all in Salesforce or HubSpot. And then at the end of the day, what we'll do is we'll help you kind of build patterns around like, hey, like here's the gifts of when you should send it. Here's the responses you got. So you can sort of prove like every dollar spent on gifting, how much is that helping actually close at the end of the day. How we raised money, we had product market fit really fast. Because when we launched, a lot of marketers had a bunch of like boxes under their desk of like Yeti cups or, you know, like bags they give out at conferences, and it was messy. So we had a question we'd ask all the time that proved product market fit is we talked to somebody, we're like, hey, like last year was Christmas, like did you do holiday gifts? Everyone was like, oh yeah, we sent popcorn to all my employees. We're like, that's awesome. Or customers. We're like, that's great. Like how much you spend? Spent, you know, 10K. What'd that do for you? And no one could ever answer that question. Like everyone was always doing holiday gifts, like spending $10,000, $20,000, $100,000 on gifts if you're like an HP, but no one had the data or the tracking on how that actually helped. And so we would go to them and be like, let's plug this into your CRM and we'll prove that the 100K you spent on holiday gifts actually helped customers renew or helped them grow, or and we can automate it for you. And that pitch like took us from zero to 20 million in a couple of years. And then 20 to 50 a couple of years after that. So we had really hockey stick style growth that helped. And then owning the warehouses was at the time crazy, but that became our moat because we could control a product or a launch of a new product from putting it in a box to having it delivered. And we had to raise a lot of money to scale our warehouse footprint. Our competition was using 3PLs, mm-hmm. which is fine, but it's just a third party. And we wanted to own the whole cycle.
Now, during the pandemic, you had a massive tailwind.
Huge.
If I read this correctly. And you obviously, I mean, like everybody else, you talked about laying off people, but you tried to stay, you know, a human to your employees and your customers as well. Now, and you also have a co-founder, Chris. Like for our listeners who are pretty much founders and entrepreneurs who are trying to figure out their businesses. Hey, if you don't mind talking a little bit about what did you do during the pandemic? How did you manage the downside of that? And how do you divide as a co-founder? You have a co-founder. How do you divide and conquer responsibilities, attributes, that kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, if you start with the co-founder first, so Chris is, him and I met at university, and then we both moved to San Francisco at the same time. I slept on his couch because I was a year behind him for a long time. And so like we were buddies before we started the company, but there's an interesting line with a co-founder. So like you can be friends, absolutely. But I also think that like you have to be good at having disagreements and knowing how to solve them. And Chris lives two blocks from me where I live, and I'm across the bridge. I'm in like the Marin area of the Bay Area. And like, so he's two blocks away. And so like him and I, and we did that during COVID too. So we would, you know, be in the same circle. And so like, you have to be able to disagree. I would say it's closer to a sibling than it is a partner. And so like you argue, you fight, you disagree, but you still kind of love each other at the end where you're like, I wouldn't want to do this with somebody else. I mean, like there's been weeks where I just hate the guy. And like, and there's weeks where, but like, of course there's always that respect level there, and our wives are friends and our kids are friends. And so I think it's the co-founder thing, I wouldn't do it any other way. I think that's something that's helped a lot with building. Solopreneurs who do it alone, I respect so much, because that's a lonely path to make decisions alone. I think if, you know, there's a lot of people that do that well. I need to kind of people to bounce things off of. During COVID, to answer your second question, our business blew up. It was, we raised a lot of money because we had a lot of customers coming to us to help send gifts to employees. And we absorbed most companies' like events budgets. So mm-hmm. It was one of those where if you spent $1 million on events, you sent it to gifting. Because you're like, I need to do virtual events. I need to do physical mailers to people. So we went from 50 people to 600 in a couple of years of COVID. But then the marching orders from the money we raised was grow as fast as possible. It was go and buy the market. And so we hired really fast. And then when everything changed in 2022, like now you got to be profitable. It became one of those things where it's like, okay, now we need to eliminate jobs. And that was tough. I mean, that was one of those, like, you can only look at so many spreadsheets, and like being human is how we kind of sold it to ourselves. Like we need to do this. Like when we did a layoff, we did individual phone calls with every person. And there's 200 of them that we let go on the first layoff.
Oh, wow.
That you have like, so it's a good... It's a good way to do it, I think. I mean, like, I'm not a fan of the way most companies do layoffs these days. You know, the email you send out and everyone like can't log into their computer anymore. And I get why massive companies need to do that. But it's just, talk about loyalty going out the window on that. I mean, like, I think that like, if you got to do a layoff and you have to do like mass ones, at least do it in person. I think,
yeah.
Like, I know people are all over the place, but like, at least do the Zoom for people that aren't there. I know that it's the...
Yeah, don't send an email.
Like,
don't send an email.
Just feels like the weenie way out, right? I mean, like, I mean, firing's never fun. And if you like firing, then I don't want to be your friend. But like, if you need to do it, I think be man enough to do it in person, I think is the best way to do it.
And do you find that gifting, Braden, works for every type of business or a specific business? Like services, for instance, does it work?
Yeah, it doesn't work at scale. I think it's more like, I think it works well for like large software type companies if you're sending like the same gift multiple times. And like, that's when the cost is most effective. Like mm-hmm. If you're a Salesforce sending out Trailblazer hoodies, it's great because you can send thousands and thousands of them. If you're a service business and each one of your customers is a bit different, your gifts are more individualized, like meaning that like, you know, that customer really likes wine mm-hmm. and like it works there too. It's just, it's not something you would send multiple times a quarter. You do it once. And like, we do a lot of that too. We call it the marketplace, just things you can send kind of one off. But I think like the ones where it gets kind of hairy, like finance companies, you got to be careful. Like there's certain amounts you got to be under. If you're a healthcare company, same thing. I think it works well there, but you need to make sure you're not sending very expensive, pricey things
because
you
could. Because I would imagine like in the regulatory business or industry, they have, you know, rules around accepting gifts, et cetera, right?
Yep.
I would imagine.
$25 and below, basically,
is like
what the goal is.
Yeah. Now, the experience there prepared you to slash experts, I'm assuming. Because
it sounds like
you already done the pre-work with Sendoso and now off to the next one, which is, I can feel like it's almost the 2.0 of Sendoso. I don't know.
Yeah. Chris, who's still the CEO of Sendoso, maybe he'll come and buy it. It'd be perfect.
He's listening to this podcast.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there's it is very much so. Because I think like we're about relationships at Sendoso and helping you build those with gifting. And experts is the same idea. Only you're talking to people that are already using a tool who will give you not a gift, but like a physical feedback as to how they use that product. For every customer that does a phone call, like with a prospect with slash experts, we thank. So there's a gift that goes to them. It could be cash, e-gift, physical gift. So there's still that gifting element in our current product that works well. I think that's important to have and thank people.
Yeah. Now, so when you started this thing in 2024, that's not an old company. I mean, this, what is it, 2 years? Yeah, 2 years.
2025.
April 2025?
Yeah. I mean, like we started building in 2024. Our launch was April 2025. So yeah, so like a year and a half.
And you already collected $2 million raised in fund?
Two and a half. Yeah, which is good. I raised from the exact same board.
I think you should have a business collecting fund.
The funding one's good if you tell the right story. I also raised from the board that invested in Sendoso. So it was the exact same people. And so like, I don't know if it was a good thing or a bad thing, but they were like, yeah, here's some money. Go build something else. See you later. Maybe it was a good thing. Or they were like, hey, I can double down on something. But yeah, it was about a year in, been selling, which has been fun. I mean, we've learned a lot. We're kind of passing that 100 customer mark, which has been kind of quicker than we thought.
And you know, when somebody moves from one company to another, normally they take a break, but you didn't take a break. You just continue.
Yeah. I go back and forth on that one.
You should have. Like,
yeah. I wouldn't know what to do with myself. It's one of those things where like, it'd be fun to, I mean, I have a 4-year-old and she's great. And like, we spend a ton of time together. And like, I think the nice part about working from home now is there's not a lot of commuting, so you can get more work done throughout the day. And so, yeah, I kind of went right into it. I think if I can get this one to a certain point, then I maybe have one more in me is what I tell myself. Or I might just go coach soccer. I don't know. Yeah. One or the other.
Coach soccer. I can't see you doing that. So there must have been a problem you're trying to solve that you couldn't stop thinking about. And that's, you know, how, you know, you moved from one company to another with no gap in between, I would say.
Yeah, so it was a problem we saw at Sendoso. We'd have a lot of people come to our site and they wouldn't take a demo. Like every single site out there is like contact us and book a demo buttons, like the two main CTAs on our website. And people would come and they wouldn't click those. Like they would see a case study and then they'd pop up in like a pavilion or take the community that people join and they would post a question. Like, hey, how's anyone solving this problem? And people would post responses like, oh, we use this tool. And we're like, all this person is trying to do is solve a challenge or a problem they have. They're looking to back channel tools are being recommended to them. And some would be researching Sendoso. We were like, we should just make it easier for them to talk to customers of a product rather than skirt around these communities and hope someone responds to your comment. Like, let's just give them a list and give them social proof. People are actually already using the tool who are willing to have a conversation. So in simplest terms, we take the reference from the very end of the sales cycle and put it at the beginning.
You know, I'm dealing with somebody right now. I consult for a company who's dealing right now. I mean, it sounds like a top of the funnel solution to a problem, really, because most companies in the world today have top of the funnel issue. They can't get enough leads at the top of the funnel, and they're trying to attract as many leads as possible using various methods, tricks, if you want to call them. Mm-hmm. But you know, this particular one, it sounds like a no-brainer, to be honest with you. I mean, you're spending money on marketing anyway. If you can allocate some of that money to something like this that gets you results right away and it gets people into the mode of, you know, there's a company that does software for a specific service and they're trying to get a demo out and they're trying to get more people to take their demos. Maybe this is one of their ways to get the people to take a demo.
Yeah, I mean, like the best way to sell a tool or a software is via a customer already using it. And there's no way around that. I mean, this is the reason why we all do work dinners so often. In a work dinner, you put your prospect right next to your customer because you want them to have a conversation at some point. And like, it's like the oldest trick in sales book of like, hey, like if this customer is talking about how well they use you, isn't that great? And hopefully the prospect overhears it.
Normally you take like one of those guys, you put them in the room, but you're doing it virtually.
You're doing it virtually. I mean, which is one of those things where, and like I was one of these people, like a sales demo is great, but a lot of the time it's a generic walkthrough of a system. And like, that's not what someone's looking for. They're looking for like, hey, here's my problem, my challenge. I'm an X title at this company and I want to get a promotion. I want to get a raise. I'm trying to solve a problem. How do you do it? And like when that's a salesperson that they're not getting the answer they want because they were talking to a customer is the best way to do it because they've already used it. They've implemented it. They've had the problems. They've had the
challenges. It's your best business card.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's why when you go to pages these days, every single company website has logos on their site of like, these are all the companies we work with. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, cool, that's great. But like, how are they using you? And like, that's the question we're trying to help folks solve.
Yeah. And 90% of those logos on that website, by the way, they're expired.
But yeah, right. Yeah, they're never. Yeah, they're never updated. That's very true. Very true.
What do you mean by slash experts? I mean, where did the name come from? What is it referenced to?
So like the goal behind it was, if you take a company like Oracle, be like oracle.com/experts. And on that page would be a bunch of people that are could like do phone calls with you. We've grown that to like now doing an agent, doing the matching. So, but those slash expert pages still exist on a couple of our customers, but a lot of it now is just connecting via agents and emails.
Is this your website? So, slash expert? Is that what it is?
Yeah. /experts.com. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, how is this the company is different from what you've done before in terms of how you operate it day to day?
In terms of people, or in terms of like kind of like across
people,
the board?
People, obviously, and technology, yeah, et cetera. So I obviously don't need warehousing for this one, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I got it. So my engineering team is the exact same from Sendoso.
Okay.
When I left Sendoso, I took a couple of the founding engineers with me. So I have the exact same team of those folks. They were given their blessing from Sendoso. So there's all that same crew I've worked with forever, 15 plus years. And I haven't had to hire as many go-to-market people as I did at Sendoso. So I have two salespeople, and both of them are probably a team of, I would say, 8. I mean, like with the tools and the methods that are out there, like you can overload a person a lot easier today than you could in the past. So if it's, you know, if they have demos every 30 minutes, or they're working, you know, like 200 opportunities, you know, it's great. And so like hopefully you're using enough tools to help it, whether they can handle that load. And you want them crushing their quota before I go and hire again, is the way I've looked at it. At Sendoso, we did it opposite, where it was, hey, let's grow into our pipeline. Like, let's hire 10 people and then we'll build the pipeline for them. I've done it the opposite this time, where it's, I'm going to have the pipeline.
Is this where you said, for instance, as I was reading a little bit about you, is you lead with contractors and AI before making full-time hires? Is that what you meant by technology?
Yeah. So like we put that as a rule in the company. So like, if we're trying to solve a problem, the first thing is like, hey, can a tool, like can a software solve this? And like, if a software can solve it, great, like, let's do it. If it can't, then like, all right, can an AI solve it? No. Okay. And then can a contractor solve it? And then if it's no to all of those, then we'll hire.
You know what, Brady, you're describing sort of like the mood of hiring across the globe now.
Yeah.
It's pretty much the business practice right now, right? Can I find a tool? That's option number one. Option number two, can I find a contractor to fix a short-term problem? Number two, and number three, if all fails, okay, I got nothing. I got to bite the bullet and hire somebody. Before, yeah, it was like, it's almost like we tipped the pyramid upside down in terms of the hiring practice.
Yeah. I think it used to be you would hire for somebody with like knowing you had a job for them, but you weren't sure of all the details of the job and you kind of would throw things there. Now we make sure there's a big enough hole for that person before we...
And how do you use AI in your world right now, specifically in slash experts? How are you using it? In a development or in...
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'll give you two answers. The first one is like in our process. So like we're all AI top of funnel. So for all of our AI SDR outreach is all AI tools. Our demo, same thing. Like you can go the route of like talking to an AI robot for a demo, or you can talk to a human. Once you're in our cadence, like we're using our tool pretty aggressively of like, hey, talking to our current customers. So I would say, and then back of the house from finance, so all those things are all tools. It's one of those where probably over adopted some of them. And then from our own tool, if you're using our own tool, we have an AI agent called Carly. And what they're doing is like, if you've taken a demo with one of our customers and you're in their pipeline, you might get emails from Carly, or they can call the person whatever they want. Carly is what we call it internally. Maybe it's Jim, they call it. And so like Carly's sending emails saying, hey, like glad you took a demo with us. You should talk to a customer who is a lot like you, or here's a review, or here's a case study that was relevant. And so Carly will try to nudge you along the way through your sales cycle. And that's an agent. It's getting smarter as it goes along. So between all of our customers, it's learning when the best time is to send a case study or review or an expert call. And it's being kind of agentic there to make sure it's doing the right things to help close that deal.
You know, you just reminded me, I had somebody on the podcast not too long ago, and they told me about the country of Albania hiring a minister, you know, that's a government minister, in charge of anti-corruption. And that minister is an AI agent. It's not a real human.
Yeah.
I just couldn't believe it.
Yeah. I think the agent thing is interesting. I think it's one of those where it does a really good job of solving problems right now, but I do think it is like a intern. And so you have to keep a very close eye on it, especially when it comes to like your very like important parts of the company, like the finance side or pipeline cleaning side. I think that, or if it's writing emails for you, I think you need to train it. Mm-hmm. So it gets smarter on like how to respond, kind of like you would like an intern or like an entry level marketer or sales type person.
Now, for the audience, Slash Experts connects prospects directly to a vendor, existing customers, before sales rep ever gets to be involved or make a call, etc. So it's positioned really at the top of the funnel. Walk me, if you don't mind, Braden, through and what actually happened when a prospect lands on Slash Experts power page.
Yeah.
What do they see? Yeah. How do they get moved through the system? What happens?
Yeah, two big use cases for us. So the first one is like in your example is kind of top of funnel. So they haven't talked to sales yet. So maybe you've gone to a page a couple times, let's ABC Software. Maybe you've looked at ABC Software's G2 reviews and you're like, okay, this is a company that I like. It's going to hopefully solve a problem for me. And you go to the page one more time to kind of look at the page and look at a case study, and a pop-up might happen. And it'll say, hey, like you've been here a few times, you should talk to a customer, someone who's already using us who looks like you. And if they look like you, then what you can do is you can book a time with them directly. So a calendar pops up, you can pick a time when they're open. It could be, you know, like today, it could be tomorrow. And then you can book a call directly. So like that's one use case. The other use case is, let's say you are a sales rep and you've had a conversation with a customer or a prospect, say they've gone silent, say they haven't responded to you. You can actually inject kind of our expert page right there. So you'd be like, hey, like, you know, Robin, we've talked a few times, like you should connect to a customer who looks a lot like you. Here's a booking link. So the goal is to basically use that as a tool to accelerate the deal to actually get it closed. So those are the two big use cases. Now on the back end, let's say a call takes place. Now that call is recorded. All that data is given back to you. You can use that information to help train any of your chatbots. The customer's thanked with a gift. And then all that data is added to your CRM as like, hey, here's the actual customer that did the phone call, the deal closed or didn't close. So you start to keep track as to which one of your references are actually helping you close deals, which is not something we've seen done before. Like reference calls have always been around, but they're always end of sales cycle. So our goal is like, let's make it easier for people to be able to track like when we loop a reference in and who's actually helping us close deals.
What happens when the conversation goes badly, if it goes badly?
It does. Yeah. I mean, like there's a couple options there. I think like the customer decides like who, door will stay closed. The customer decides who they want to have on that page. And we also recommend based on our own tools, like, hey, based on your CRM, here's the 50 people we think should be based on NPS scores, based on age of customer. So we recommend, they recommend, and they decide who they want on there. Now you can get pretty technical, meaning if a customer has an open ticket in Salesforce, they can get pulled from the page automatically so they can't book a call.
Do you work with HubSpot as well or just Salesforce?
We do. HubSpot and Salesforce. I use Salesforce. It's always my example. My wife works for Salesforce. And so it's like ingrained in my head. I'm like, we're deep in the Kool-Aid of Benioff, like 10 years here. That's so, like, I use HubSpot myself. But there's, I know, right? Bad news. I know, right? Yeah, so you can mark if a customer might be angry, they can't get booked. You can also decide like, hey, like, you know, like I'm going to pull these customers because we have a new integration happening, and you can base it on NPS scores. If a bad convo happens, which we've had happen, like a customer's just like, hey, I wouldn't buy it again. Then, I mean, like a lot of the time, like if the sales rep's involved, like they can go in and save it and be like, hey, like you've seen the real side of how our software works. Like they weren't happy because something didn't work properly. We fixed it. Mm-hmm. So I think that like sometimes it takes the right sales rep to get involved, but those are few and far between. I mean, if a customer is on that page and they're taking a phone call, typically they're happy to do it. And they're already doing reference calls for you.
That's what I was going to ask you, because, hey, how do we convince these customers to become a reference on a regular basis and put them in a calendar? They may do it for you like once every 6 months, if you ask nicely in some cases, but how do you bring them into the system and what's in it for them?
Yeah. Every sales rep, which I'm sure you know this as well, every sales rep has like one or two people they use for every reference, and they're in their back pocket, because the typical process of big companies when you need a reference is you got to go to a Slack channel and you ask for it, and then you maybe get one 4 or 5 days later, and then you introduce them and you hope it goes well. So every good sales rep has like two people they know well that use their tool who are always willing to jump on phone calls. And like, that's usually what you do. And like the problem with that is once you get someone asking for like, hey, I need a reference that is in finance, and or any references in finance who lives in Toronto, you're like, oh man, all right, I gotta like get more detail, then I gotta go to that Slack channel. But most of them try to avoid that because the process takes too long and they're trying to accelerate the deal.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that we make it easy is when we launch, we'll pull references from their own CRM that maybe they're not already using. We'll ask sales, like, hey, who can we put in this tool? And you know, that's are great references who say nice things about you. And then the reference has control over how often they take phone calls. So they might be like, hey, I take a phone call.
Oh, so they are part of the system. They're not just their calendar.
So they are part of they sign up because like we have to pay. So like they sign up, they decide how often they take calls, they integrate their calendar. And then every time they do a phone call, they're also thanked. Thanks could be a discount on contracts. Thanks could be a payment, could be cash, e-gifts, charity send, it's up to them. Or it could be a physical gift if they want. And that's all automated. Like, you know, like that sales rep that has a reference in their back pocket that they always forget to thank. Now we automate the gift. They're getting thank yous from them.
No, I live in Canada, and this conversation sometimes maybe it's strange to some of my Canadian folks here, but globally it makes sense. But for those countries where, you know, gifting in this fashion that you're mentioning or getting something in return, being a reference, whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
It sometimes is viewed as bribery. And probably that word is underlined in a, you know, I'm just using it for context. It's not bribery, obviously, but some people think of it as such. What's your comeback to that?
Depends on where you're growing. So like there's a lot. And the only reason I know this is because of how much time I spent in gifting. So like e-gifts are a good example. They don't work well in Europe. Europe, they tend to see it as bribery. It's big there. When it comes to like a lot of the Asian countries, like they're fine with e-gifts, but like sending alcohol is kind of strange over there. So my advice is to know your customer and to know what they might respond well to. I think if you're in the US, doing a couple $100 to an e-gift of their choice is important. If you're selling to finance, do not do that. Finance, you should do a charity send every single time. Charity, it should be a $250 thing to the SPCA dog thing of like their neighborhood and they can choose. Yeah. So the way that we've done it and combated that is it is the choice of the expert. So the person doing the phone call. So it's like they get an email saying, hey, thanks so much for the phone call. You get $200 in your account. You can send that to charity. You can do an e-gift to DoorDash. You can do cash. You can donate it. It's kind of up to you. And that's helped because they can decide what they want to do with it. And it's very specific to industry. If it's finance versus healthcare versus, you know, whatever have you. And like finance donates every single time.
Now, another topic you're making, you know, I saw this one and it makes sense actually. Word of mouth on steroids. This is what this platform is. You're trying to take the word of mouth and amplify it in a very unique way. So the measuring of that, I guess that would be my next question. Now we have the engagement. People are talking, either the customer or prospects. What kind of KPIs, measurements, do you pull any data out of these conversations?
A ton.
With the advancement of AI now, you can shred the data into small pieces if you want to.
Yeah. After they leave me. There's like from the simplest to like the most advanced. The simplest are like, you viewed the page of like all the people you could have phone calls with. You viewed the page. Awesome. Like that's a stat I want to track. Because even if you don't book a call, and your deal closes, that's something I want to be like, hey, you know, they saw this page, they saw the people they could have phone calls with, and they didn't book somebody, but the deal closed. Like, that's great. Like, that means that, like, you know, that's good social proof for your site. The next one is if a call happens and between a customer and a prospect, and the call goes well, and then the deal closes. Great. Like, what we're seeing right now is when we're comparing those phone calls to ones where they did not talk to a customer. The deals are usually faster when they talk to a customer. It's almost like, I think we shave about 30 days off of a deal. And then the second one is deals also bigger. So we're seeing about, which we didn't expect, we're seeing about a 10% larger deal close because negotiation is a lot easier for the sales rep because they always talk about price on those calls. So I was like, hey, like, what are you paying for this tool? The customer usually says a higher price point because they've been a customer for a while. And it's usually a ballpark. And so like it makes negotiation easier because they're like, oh, well, that customer I talked to, they're paying X. So like I imagine it's probably gonna be around that. And so like the deals are larger too, which we didn't expect. That's been kind of a cool thing to see. So we'll track all three of those and we'll report back and be like, hey, here's the large deal, here's speed of deal, and here's how many times that page was viewed.
I was gonna ask you like, what are the signals that surprised you the most? But you probably answered this one by saying, you know, some of the deals
deal size.
Expecting them to go higher now. And people are willing to pay a little bit more because they got information. Maybe the vendor was supposed to drop the price, but they got talking to the customer who was paying more, and they sort of agree in their mind. It's a mindset, right? that they are going to be paying a bit more.
I mean, you can apply it to like when you buy like a car. I mean, like when you go and talk to your friend that has the same car, like, oh, what do you pay for this guy? And like, oh, like I paid X, and you're like, oh man, that's a good deal. Yeah. Like even in your head, you might not, you're like, I mean, like, and with PLG, it's a bit different. But I mean, like with most of our enterprise customers, like it's, like pricing is all over the place. And so it's one of those where like, if you're thinking you're getting a deal, or if that customer is like, oh, I got a really good deal for this, but like the price they give you is a bit higher. And you're like, oh, sweet. You're like, if I'm paying around that, I'm getting a good deal, even though it's, you know, list price.
True. Now, tell me, have you ever run into a situation where you had to convince like a VP sales to put his customers in front of prospects?
And always.
How did you convince them? Like, I mean, they must be apprehensive a little bit.
Yeah. So like, it's like, this is a the complication of selling this is we have to talk to customer success to put the customers in there. Sales is one as well, because sales, like it's the customer being in the site isn't the concern from sales. Sales' biggest concern is I don't have control over the conversation.
That's right.
And, yeah. And so it's one of those where it's like, oh, like if I put somebody on a phone call and they're with a customer of mine, I don't know what that customer is going to say. And like, I think that's a bigger problem, because I think that like, for me, if I talk to a sales or a CRO and I'm like, it's already happening. I'm like, you're putting your head in the sand. If you think that like this deal you're trying to close, they haven't called their friends who are using you saying, hey, would you buy it again? Do you like it? Like sales is not in an empty silo of like, I just think the idea of cold calling and selling a deal for $20,000 isn't a thing anymore. Like before I buy any piece of software, I'm typically calling my friends that are in similar jobs saying, hey, are you using X? Do you like it? Would you do it again? And so we're just making that process easier. So sales is having that combo around like, hey, like, yeah, you're not going to be in the phone call, but at least you know they're chatting with somebody. Like,
oh, 100%.
And like all the references you do from a sales standpoint, like you're never on those phone calls. And like a lot of the process with references is like you just assume it happens. Or, I mean, maybe like I was trained in sales to always try to avoid the reference. When someone was like, hey, like I need a reference, you'd be like, what about this case study? This case study is great, right? Like
you take them to the white paper, you take
them to the case study. Here's the white paper. Like, we're like, oh, you know what? You're far below our ACV threshold. Like we only do case studies to protect our customers when they're up, when you're above 100K. All the BS you throw at them to try to avoid the reference. And I think that doesn't work anymore, because like with the G2 and the reviews you can go read. I mean, even though there's not customer names on all of them, it helps. So let's just make it easier and have them be able to have a conversation with the user. And sales needs to get on board with that, because I think it's one of those when we get pushback there, it's interesting, and that's usually the.
And you know what? There's a lot of, you know, the internet now is full of fake reviews and made up comments and compliments, etc. I think to cut through the noise, I think that direct connection. Cut through the noise, you know, don't go on LinkedIn and try to find the reviews and what people are saying about certain things, because people can throw on the internet their moments of frustrations or the moments of happiness for them for some reason. But you need that view that it's so objective that you, when you think about it, it's almost scientific, and that's going to be straight through to a conversation with somebody who's using the product right now.
Yeah, exactly. And like, and I think that like even we have, this is an interesting learning that we did. We have customers who will not just add their customers on the expert page where they can book, but they'll add like their head of CX on there, which was interesting. So we've seen prospects go and do a phone conversation with the head of CX versus a customer saying, hey, what's onboarding like? What problems have you seen? And like they, like the mentalness is like, it's almost like it's a more honest conversation, the ones we've listened to, than a conversation with sales. And I think that's unfortunate, because there's some salespeople that, you know, they're not consultative. They're just trying to shove a product down your throat because they're trying to hit a number. And so I think sometimes to have a more honest conversation with somebody internally helps get the deal closed too.
Now, allow me to bring this conversation into the world you probably have not really dealt with, the language industry or the language services industry, which it's close to being a $70 billion industry worldwide, where language companies right now sell to large enterprises. The deals can take 12 to 18 months. Buyers cannot easily differentiate providers because it's language, right? So, you know, if I give you a piece of content in Japanese, you don't understand Japanese, you have to rely on what's written on the page. Can't judge it. The most powerful thing you can offer is a reference call with existing customer. But it's entirely untracked or unscalable. You know, what does the language industry fit in a grand scheme of thing when it comes to the service offering that you have with Slash Expert?
Yeah, I mean, like there's one is what you just mentioned. I mean, being able to offer not just a reference call with one or two, but a page of like, hey, here's all our happy customers who are using us. I think a big one is when you lean into having competitors that are very similar to you, is folks are going to want to have a phone conversation with somebody that looks like them and a similar title to them. So offering a reference where it's not just like, hey, you're a CFO. Do you want to talk to one of our customers who's a sales manager? Like, no, I want to talk to a CFO at another company who's using you. And so like doing matching and pairing with different people that look like them at other companies is going to be massively beneficial to you if you're only trying to compete on, you know, a really good reference.
No,
I think that's important.
Braden, the request for proposal generally ask for, if people are buying through a request for proposal, some people aren't, they generally ask for reference. It's part of their...
Always.
Yeah. So this is before we get to that stage. You're talking about pre-sale, not way down the road when, you know, a large company puts an RFP, right?
I think both. I mean, like for us, like you can, like we have every single expert for us, for like they're attached to a company. They have a booking link that they can use. And so like when you have an RFP, you can usually add a page that's more generic. And on that page, let's say it's a slash experts page, gold.com/experts. On that page, there's 100 customers. And you can filter it based on title, based on location, based on whatever other parameters you want to add. So putting that in the RFP, you've now not just given, you know, let's say it asked for 3 references, you've given 100. And so it becomes more of a model around like, hey, if you want to talk to any of our customers, here you go. And like that makes you stand out. Is having a link like that on an RFP versus like, hey, you should go talk to these 3 people. Here's their emails, which never really happens through
look, RFPs. If nothing else, streamlining that entire referencing or reference process inside of an organization, it's a big deal. Like every time you run an RFP, you got to send Slack messages, you got to get on Teams, you got to call people, you got to beg your peers, hey, I don't have anybody in this industry. You cover this industry. Can you get me some names? It's just to streamline them into, even you can use them internally, I'm assuming.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like we have enterprise customers, it's that they have pages where they'll just share a link for someone who's already using that tool inside the company. And like, and they'll try to do land and expand type deals. So yeah, I mean like the reference tool is the reference process alone is messy. And like, so like, let alone like the problem where we've been growing a company is more like top of funnel, like people visiting websites, but just in the RFP world. Yeah. I mean, having a link you could use and everyone's already opted in to being a reference for you. And that just speeds up a very long process for sure.
In what industry are you finding like peer conversations is more successful than other or more powerful?
My background being in like B2B software is like where we've grown for our year in operation. So it's a lot of B2B software companies right now. We've also messed around with finance companies too. Like a financial advisor type company. So those are probably the 2 biggest areas. We've not gone to the language world. I would love to. It's one of those where it's like, and we have a lot of success with enterprise. Anyone that has like a book a demo button on their website is a really great fit for us. Services are a bit more complicated where it's like more contact us. But like, if you're trying to get someone to go and talk to sales, like we could fit in nicely.
Now we've talked a little bit about this one, but I'd love to figure out, we're always talking about where to inject a human in the process of an AI, for instance, where you're heavily invested in or vested in using AI in various parts of your company. So right now I feel like in everything, if you're trying to find a job, or somebody's trying to recruit somebody, AI is either building the CV or building the product brochure or whatever it is. And somebody else has another AI bot evaluating all this. In a B2B interaction right now, AI is taking place on the selling and on the acquiring part or on the purchasing part. And it's pretty much an automated sequences. AI, SDRs, AI written emails. Where do you, in your platform, I know you've mentioned you use AI, but is there specific steps you still inject humans and where they are?
Yeah, like the human in the loop world. Now, I think that like with the invention of so many of the superhumans and type tools, I think there still needs to be a human involved if you buy a tool that costs more than $10,000. I think $10,000 is the threshold right now. You're spending more than that, then I think you need to talk to a human somewhere in the sales cycle. Now there's exceptions. I think if you're buying like AWS or Microsoft, I think like sure. But like I think if you're wanting to buy a new tool, I still think there's a human involved somewhere because what you're trying to solve might be unique to you and your industry. And so with us, we have a more traditional sales cycle. Well, your first step with us is talking to an actual human. It's like, hey, like, and we'll qualify you. We're like, hey, like, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to solve for? And then from there, we might inject a customer in our own tool. But like,
have you played around with the voice AI?
I have a ton. Yeah. Yeah, there's one by you called Ribbon that does a lot of it. I think they're great. I think it's a really cool at scale problem to solve, but I still think that there needs to be a human involved somewhere. If you're spending more than 10 grand on a piece of software, I just don't think it works yet. And I also think that like salespeople one day might become account managers. And so maybe like account managers and salespeople are one and the same, or like everyone signs up with the PLG process of like paying 10 bucks a month. And at some point you want to upgrade or change things or integrate. You want to talk to humans somewhere. I just think that, yeah. I don't think that's going anywhere anytime soon.
No, if somebody's interested from our audience in engaging, what does an engagement look like with your company /experts?
Yeah, I think just go to /experts.com. You have two directions. What direction? One is you can talk to a customer of ours. The second one is you can go talk to sales. Like you can book a demo, and it's either going to be like, we're a small company, so it'll be me or Alex who's like running the call. And so and the call is typically like a walkthrough. We give you a demo, talk about how the product works. We'll introduce you to a customer that looks like you. And then from there, it's like, hey, like, let's give it a shot. It's
traditional. You practice what you preach, probably put them in touch with one of your existing customers.
A ton. Yeah. I mean, like, you can choose at the beginning if you want to talk to a customer or talk to, you know, someone on the sales side.
And what's the pricing model look like? We don't have to be specific if you don't want to, but what does it look like?
No, I mean, like we charge a couple thousand bucks a month. And that's it. That's the whole tool. I like that pays for everything.
Okay. Yeah. Now, what does success look like for /experts in a couple of years and 3 years from now?
I think my biggest goal is for folks that are buying tools or buying a service, for example, like when they go to a page, they're wanting to talk to a customer versus talking to a sales rep. So like, let's say in a couple of years, like that becomes the model. Or as more and more AI superhuman tools roll out, and you're talking to some superhuman getting a demo product, you can ask, hey, can I talk to a customer? And then we pop up. And so the goal is like people start injecting their customer base further up in the sales funnel is success for me.
And this is for our founders out there and the entrepreneurs. You now have done this twice, Raiden. What would you tell a founder who's sitting in year one at the first company right now about things nobody warned them about?
Man. You know, being an entrepreneur is lonely. I think like even with a co-founder and even with investors who have a day where like you, it's very much like what you decide to do each day and each week. And then your team or your co-founder might check in. You might talk once a day, once a week, once a month, whatever it might be. So my advice is like to organize your day. And whatever method you use, like I still write things down as these are my 10 tasks I need to accomplish today. And I, you know, cross off those things. And then like you might have a day where you go from negotiating a contract to talking to an angry employee to raising money to, you know, if you're in an office to like, you know, cleaning the bathroom. And so there's no like actual job description for your job. But like my biggest advice is be okay with that. Never stop selling as a founder. So even if you have a massive sales team, and if you started in go-to-market or if you started in engineering, make sure you keep that skill sharp and go back and do like those things that are like really closely related to selling the product or building the product. And then, because it's lonely, like have a to-do list or what you're trying to accomplish and keep a lot of your customers close, especially your first 10 or 20. Those are, you know, people that are true believers, and make sure you keep talking to them.
Well, I want to thank you so much for the lovely conversation and a pleasure meeting you today on this conversation. It was generally a rare conversation. I've never really dug into the actual top of the funnel discussion in this kind of an innovation that you just brought to the audience today. I really appreciate your time. Did we cover everything that you had in mind, or is there another point that you'd like to throw out there before we...
No, I think it's perfect. I think like as the world changes and more software, I feel like every day there's a new tool. So I think I think we covered it all. Would love if anyone wants to give us a shot to reach out to me. I'm the only Braden Young on LinkedIn also. So my parents were creative with my spelling. Connect with me on LinkedIn too.
And also for the audience, if you're listening to this and you're interested in this conversation and you'd like to connect with Braden Young, please connect with me if you can't find him, and I'll be happy to do an introduction for you.
Please.
You know, I become a little bit of an ambassador for all of our guest speakers. Whoever comes on this channel, I'm happy to connect you guys and facilitate a conversation. That's no problem at all. And I truly enjoyed the conversation, Braden. That's good.
Thanks, Robin.
And for the audience, I want to thank you so much for joining me on this journey for recording episode 212. If you're coming on our audio channels, thanks for listening in. If you're watching us on YouTube, thanks for sharing, liking, commenting. And also if you're reading our blog post where I summarize these conversations at robinayoub.blog and subscribing there, really appreciate that as well. And I will see you at the next episode. Thanks so much. Talk to you next time. Bye.